Dr. Charles Clife dictating a letter to Mr. John Beard, Executive Director, Fountain House. Dear Mr. Beard, I wanted to write to express to you my appreciation for your kind hospitality during my recent visit to Fountain House, period. I was most appreciative that we had an opportunity to meet personally, and it was for me a highly educational, informative, and thoroughly enjoyable visit, period. I am most impressed with your new building and your program, and I learned a number of useful techniques which I feel have great pertinence and relevance to the Conard House program as currently in operation.
Okay, when I learned that he was on the festivals with that day, that it was during a weekend, there was a young couple out of the Bay Area, I believe, or Los Angeles, and they took us out for lunch. It was Caesar, Andy, Newton, and this couple and myself. We went over to his buddy's restaurant, and all of us had some eating except Caesar, and we had some real nice food there. They treat us real good. And we were all wondering why he hadn't had anything to eat. I had an idea, because he's done this before, and although I wasn't sure, but I had an idea that he was on something like this. I think the only one that knew for sure was Helen at that time. And after we got out of the restaurant, you know, they asked him why is his phone. He just wasn't hungry, and he wasn't feeling well. He didn't want anybody to know it. At this time it was, well, they just didn't want anybody to know what's supposed to be a secret thing. But after they dropped us off, I asked him, you know, to tell me the truth, that was he one of the fans? And he said yes, but not to tell anybody, just to keep it to myself, that he was on his fifth day.
And did you ask
him
why?
Yes, I did. And he answered, you know, that it was for, that he heard that things were getting kind of rough, you know, people were getting edgy to the point that they wanted to go out and commit violence, you know, or that the picket line was getting a little loud, and that he was afraid that there would, somebody had reported to him that there was, some of the people in the picket line had been throwing clods at the scabs, you know. He had, at a previous meeting, he had asked the people to stop this, you know, because it wasn't the way we were going to do things. And I guess the thing continued a little, you know, clod throwing and, bad language use on the line, I guess, to an extent, and all these sort of things. It's the way it started. It was building up, you know, it was getting pretty tense. And he said that was making this penance, as he called it, to assure himself that things would come back to normal hours, that wouldn't continue, because he said that it's the way it starts all the time, with little things, and then little things go to medium things, and then they go to big things, and he was afraid of this. I asked him that how long it was going to be, you know. I said, you know, 5 days is a long time, and I was getting kind of worried. I said, it's 5 days is, how long do you plan? He said that he had no time schedule, that he didn't make up his mind. He was just going to fast until he felt that it had been enough, or that it was, until he was satisfied, in other words. So, I think he continued for another, that was the fifth day, as I remember, and then I think on the seventh day, he made it public to the membership.
This was at that meeting?
Yes, I was at the meeting. He called a meeting. He called a meeting of all the strikers and at the Filipino Hall, and this was about in the afternoon. I think it was after lunch sometime. Must have been around 1 or 2 o'clock that we got together. And he explained that what he was doing. He says, I had been on a fast. He says, I know it's not a secret no more, and it leaked somebody. It wasn't I, but it leaked, you know, from somebody. Evidently somebody else knew about it or had wind of it. Or, I don't know how it was, but anyway. And I guess the purpose was, he was going to make it known to the membership that he was on a fast, but it wasn't. He wasn't ready then. That about 2 days later, about the seventh day, he called us together. He announced it. He said that he had been on a fast for 7 days, and he explained why. On account, like I said before, the things that were happening. And then he was going to do a little penance so that people would come back to normal. And that's me when he told us. Then there were people that started raising questions, you know, that were against it. Others were well, they said that it was fine, you know, that they didn't approve of it. It was his wish that they would respect it. Others opposed it very bitterly. And anyway, he said that he was going to spend the rest of his fast in all by himself. It, you know, he didn't want this to be publicized or anything like that. But it wasn't for that purpose. That he just wanted to be left for himself. That he was asking this of the membership to please understand. And that he would go out to the 40 acres and continue his fast over there, you know. Everything would go continuous in a normal way, that's what he wanted. So then he said that after there was a lot of questions raised and very, very bitter opposition, you know. But anyway, he said that those were his intentions, and he was going to do just that, his decision, and that he hoped that people would please try and understand, you know, what he was trying to do, you know, and, some of us really. Then he said he was going to walk to the 40 acres from the Filipino Hall. He was just going to walk, and he didn't want nobody to take him or anything. So he left. He walked out the back door and started walking, and Helen walked right after him. They walked together till 40 acres, I understand. By this time, Leroy knew by this time they had already made arrangements to a cot over at one of these small rooms over at the 40 acres and made the preparations for him to stay there. A little heater, I think it was, a big electric heater, and blankets and the cot and everything else would be necessary. And after he left, the meeting continued, and there was a lot of discussion went on. And, some people got pretty hysteric, and others mad. I would think that they got mad, really, and some others got offended. And all this sort of emotions. Got very emotional meeting.
What seemed to be the main thing that they were writing
about? Some of the arguments were that it was dangerous to his health going through these things, and he was needed very bad, you know, and that might harm his health by doing something like this. Others, I understand, thought that he was, he was trying to play Gandhi or was trying to play God or something, you know, these were the people that didn't quite understand. And others were just plain concerned, you know, about his health.
Were any of them afraid that things wouldn't go too well with the strike while he was doing this?
one of the things too, that they thought that the strike would fall apart because he wasn't there to lead it. And he did assure them that there were people, capable people, you know, he knew that there were, the strike wasn't going to just cease because he wasn't there, you know. Also, he mentioned that he would be making decisions, you know, from his bed, wherever it would be. And
did any of them bring up the idea why aren't we consulted about this, or why didn't you discuss this with us before you decided to do it?
Yes, that was brought up also. Those were some of the arguments that some of the people brought up, you know. And he said that it wasn't up to them to decide. It was his own choosing, you know. It was his own. Nobody had forced him. I mean, forcing to do it, like, I mean, do this for a stunt or something like that. That's he was forced by the whole membership because of what was happening. That's the way I understood it anyway. After the we broke the meeting up after there were some bad feelings, you know, because we, like I say, some of the people got hysterical and started accusing each other of this and that, and you know, trying to, that if something happened to Caesar on account of this, that it was your fault, no, it was yours, and like trying to blame somebody for it, but at the end, you know, we took a vote, you know, they voted we voted, I was still there, to ask Caesar, to plead with Caesar to please discontinue the thing right away. In other words, as the majority vote of the membership for these strikers, and others, it was that he continued or discontinued, by the way. In other words, that we pressure him to stop the fast, you know. But there were more against it than for it. So the ones that we were in favor, that if this was his wish, I said that we should respect him for it, you know, and just try to understand what if those that were those of us that were having a little trouble trying to understand what he was trying to do, to ask ourselves and try to understand what he was doing, because it was something serious. That he wouldn't be doing this if he didn't feel that he was the right thing to do at the time. And we also brought the argument that he had made a lot of decisions in the past, and as a rule, most of his decisions, whatever he does, is he makes them in a very sound way. Right, that we had to just go along with it, even if we didn't feel that we had to respect him as a person also, and the majority ones. I don't know what would have happened if he went gone the other way. I don't think we would have stopped him anyway. But anyway, the people felt better taking a vote, and the ones that lost, you know, they still didn't go along with the idea, and some of them, in fact, have posted bitterly all through the fast, you know, in fact, or something.
The majority voted the way you were saying.
Yes, yes, that was a majority, so that's the way it was.
When did you next see him?
It was that same evening. I drove out there after he was already there, and he was resting. And we decided that he should have a doctor. A doctor should come, and being that he was on a fast already 7 days, that a doctor should come and examine him, see how he was physically, how he was standing up. And that was arranged. There was a doctor who'd come over and examine him, and he says he was fine, you know, he just rested, to take a lot of rest, take a lot of liquids. He said juices and all that, but he didn't. He was just on water. Yeah, and after that, I seen him every day. Spent most of my time over there.
You were working at the 40 acres?
I was working at the 40 acres during that time, yes. I was starting a new building at that time. It was about the, it was decided about the second day that we would be having daily masses or in evening, mass in evenings. And we had the first mass, I think, the second day he was there. I'm not sure it was the first, no, it was the second night he spent there. And of course, the first night was in the evening when he went out there. Nothing happened, and I just, a lot of people went over and visited or just stayed around. And but the second night we started with a mass. We, you're familiar with that, the Adobe building, that big room in the front there. That's where we were holding the masses the first night, the first, second, third nights, I think. And people started bringing in and reliquias, you know, and reliquias, they call them,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Bringing
yeah,
relics of a stamp or a saint or something. In
they started right away doing that.
Yes. Oh. Mm-hmm. And it got bigger and bigger every night, you know, until then there were people that were coming out of town and they were having. People started calling in as soon as they found out about it, that they wanted to come and spend some time. And they started asking, you know, that they were going to come to the Latinos. So we figured that the amount of the calls coming in, that there was going to be a lot of people, and we had to, they weren't going to have any place to stay. So we figured that it was a good idea to rent some tents and make a tent city. That's exactly what we did. I think we rented about, at one time, I think it was up to about 60, 70 tents. And for a while there, they were all occupied. People that come from out of town came over and stayed a day or two, and then they left, and other people took the place. And it started with about 6 or 7 tents that people were going to spend the night over there. And then it people started coming in, and we just had to rush to Bakersfield or Los Angeles, and we got some trailers full of tents, and we set them up, and people started staying there. No, it wasn't. I think it rained just about at the end of the fast. It was on a Sunday that he ended his fast. And I think on a Thursday it rained, because we had planned, I remember very well, that we had planned on holding the termination of the fast and the mass and all the gathering, that Kennedy was here. We had planned it for the 40 acres, we leveled the place there, but it rained and it was too muddy, too wet, and we couldn't have it there, so at the last minute we had to. I'm not sure if it rained Thursday or Friday, I think it was Friday really, because it was 2 days. No, it hadn't rained.
No, all during February.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we used to have the ladies, my wife and some of the other ladies, used to have coffee, chocolate, and things to eat there sometimes in the evening. Yes, we used to feed the people there.
After Mass or before Mass?
This was after Mass. And there was big bonfires and a lot of people. It's seven.
It was already dark.
It was already dark by then. And we had, I think at one time we must have had, then the crowd got too big for the building there, so we went outside, started having the masses outside, because it was so, there was so many people, you know, just people coming from all over. It was just cars parked for miles sometimes, in all directions, both sides of the street. And everything was very orderly.
When did you usually start building the fire?
The fire went on around the clock, I'm sure. It went...
Where did you have the fire?
It was right in back of the service, which is the service station, the building where he was fasting.
Yeah.
And he could see the fire through his window. He couldn't see the fire, but he could see
the shadows.
The shadows, and yes, he knew that there was... Right. Right. Yes. Right. So he knew that there was a fire there all the time he was there.
Yeah.
And, it maybe during the day it died off just to the embers, but then it as soon as the evening started it just went continuously. It was cold. It was especially during at night time. It was very cold sometimes. We put up the word to some of the Chengli workers and some of the other people around that we needed firewood, and they just brought in truckloads of it. Grape stumps and all that. So we had a lot of people. You just asked and they would bring anything you wanted. It was really, that's why I know it accomplished what it was supposed to accomplish, and the people just gave all into it. I'm talking about the vast majority, because there were a few splinters that were very opposed to it.